In this episode of the podcast, it's all about outdoor photography with Liam Doran.
This is TWIP.
Welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, it's all about a topic that apparently, I guess, according to a survey I just ran on This Week in Photo to the audience, you all love outdoor photography and landscape photography and all that kind of stuff. So to that end, look who is on the show. It's Mr. Liam Doran. He is, if you go look at this guy's page, go look at his website and look at his about page, and you'll see cover after cover after cover after cover of outdoor magazines that he has graced the cover on. So we're honored. I am honored to have him on the show. Liam, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks so much, Frederick. This is awesome. I'm really psyched to be here. And thanks for such a nice intro. That was really cool.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for coming on. I think this is going to be fantastic. I'm looking forward to sort of diving in to the world of outdoor photography. I'm not an outdoor photographer. I'm more of a portrait type person, which yep. I suppose you can do portraits outside.
So technically, sure.
Yeah, but I'm not photographing people going 900 miles an hour down a vertical slope or, you know,
no.
Stuff that you're doing. So give us your elevator pitch. You're at the ski lodge and you're having some hot cocoa with somebody, and they're like, hey Liam, what do you do? What do you say to them?
I tell them kind of like what you say there. I'm an outdoor photographer. I am based in Breckenridge, Colorado, so I'm right in the middle of what I shoot, basically. So right out my door I have skiing, backcountry skiing, mountain biking, landscapes. I could shoot lifestyle and wildlife. Basically, all the outdoor categories are right here, right out my door.
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. So you know, clearly, like I was saying, there's no joke. The most popular genre of photography is outdoor. But in my experience, I've seen the range, you know, from okay, kind of mediocre outdoor to outstanding, stunning, you know, just how did that person get that shot kind of stuff. Other than just shooting and putting mileage on your shutter finger, you know, for the photographers that want to get to the level of having a number of covers like you have or at your level of work, give us some tips. Like how do you get good?
Well, oh gosh, that's a tough one, right? You know, like any other aspect of photography, a lot of it comes from dedication, just shooting a lot. The other part of it, and this goes for a lot of these kind of vertical sports, we'll call them. So rock climbing, kayaking, surfing, backcountry skiing. The photographers that are shooting sports like that are very much involved in the sport itself. They are an active participant in the sport. So you can't really be a backcountry photographer unless you're a backcountry skier. You know, anyone can go to a surf competition and sit at the end of the beach and shoot, you know, Jaws. That's the big one. I think that's it. That's the one in Hawaii. And anyone can sit there and shoot it with a long lens. But if you're not a part of that community, if you're not ingrained in the surf world, there's really not much you can do with that photo, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. So for all these sports, a big part of it is actually living and breathing the sport itself. So a lot of people are kind of disheartened when they hear they're like, oh, so I have to move to, if I want to be a ski photographer, I have to move to Whistler. I'm like, well, yeah, basically you do.
Right. Yeah. And that makes so much sense because, you know, I'm in Northern California, and a couple of years ago I went down to Santa Cruz and I'm thinking, I brought a long lens. I'm like, hey, surfers, I'm going early. I'm going to get some shots of surfers. I'm going to get epic shots. I got mediocre shots at best.
Right.
I'm not a surfer, right? So, and I don't understand the zen of the sport. I know there's a lot of spirituality and zen that goes into that sport, and I didn't at the time. I still don't really, but I didn't understand all those nuances. I think I've been on a surfboard one time. So, so for those people, if there's, you know, past Frederick is saying, "Hey, I'm going to Santa Cruz. I want to get some photos of surfers. I know I need a long lens at the very least." place, and probably I need to be shooting a fast shutter speed, right? That's the equipment I go down there with. Beyond that, am I just kind of on my own, or are there, you know, what do you just suggest? Research? What do you think?
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, you really have to be, again, a part of the sport. You know, very different than a sideline sport. Like if you're shooting football or soccer or something like that, you really don't have to have much connection to that sport as you know, other than being a good photographer and maybe knowing you know, who the star players are and where they like to be on the field or on the court at a certain time. With the outdoor stuff, you know, like I said, it's just being an active participant. So if you go down to the beach, for example, if I went down to the beach and shot some surfing, I'm not going to get the best shots either. I don't know who the right athletes are to shoot. I don't know the marketing directors of the brands of all the, you know, of the, you know, the athlete sponsors, excuse me, sorry. I don't know. And I don't know who the media directors are at any of the magazines. So you're kind of at a loss if you just show up and start shooting for a day. Now, if you spend all summer at the same beach and you go back to Mavericks again and again, and you bring coffee and donuts and you meet the surfers and you start figuring out their world and they trust you and you trust them and you start developing a working relationship, that's where your work is really going to get to a much higher level. Cause now the guys, when you know, for all these sports, like weather and conditions are so critical, right? So when Mavericks is hitting hard and it's glassing off, those guys are going to call you at, you know, 5 a.m. and say, hey, it's happening. Today's the day. Get down here now. And then you show up at the right time, the right place, with the right athletes and the right gear. And now it's all going to start coming together and you're going to get some really good shots.
I love that. And then that speaks to the whole idea of telling stories with your photographs versus just going out and capturing some photons, right? The way you describe it is you're creating photojournalism at that point, even if it just ends up in a single photo, because it means so much more than just, hey, honey, pull over. There's some surfers. Let's get a shot.
And that's the difference between like a snapshot and being an active participant in the sport itself. So, you know, again, like for rock climbing or surfing, I am an outsider, but I know how to get into that world. For skiing and mountain biking, I'm an insider. I'm in that world. It's what I'm a part of. It's what I do. I travel the globe shooting skiing, and I work with a bunch of different brands, professional athletes, magazines, and tourism boards. So for me, I'm very much on the inside of this world, if that makes sense.
And how do you get in there? You know, not to you know, build a bunch of competition for you, but for the newer photographers that are like, you know, I want to get in that space. Is it just write a bunch of letters to editors and say, hey, I do this kind of thing. Here's my work.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely. I mean, I did that, you know, when I was starting out, I absolutely was just straight up cold calling, and I turned on slide film just to give you an idea of how long I've been doing this. And I should also note that I'd never had a single slide photo published, not one. So it wasn't until I got my first digital camera that I actually started getting published. I think it was. It wasn't just a slide versus digital situation. It was more, you know, I was shooting for about 4 years. And back then, at least, that's what it took. It took a couple of years of shooting before your work was going to be good enough to be published in, you know, Ski or Powder or Backcountry or any of the big magazines like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a good segue into just gear itself, right? Because you're, you know, depending on the thing that you're doing, the gear that you choose versus, say, a portrait photographer, I'm guessing, needs to be held to a higher level of ruggedness, let's say, right? So yeah. Tell me about your gear choices.
Well, you know, for many years I was shooting on Canon DSLR, and I had everything. I had a Mark IIn, I had a 7D, a 7D Mark II, a 5D Mark III, the 1DX, a 40D. I mean, I think I had 11 Canon cameras at some point. But recently, you know, during the whole mirrorless switchover, I have changed over to shooting Sony now. So I have a Sony A7 III, which I use for my, you know, general purpose. It's almost like my backup camera now, but I do use it for landscapes. And then my everyday camera currently is the Sony, the A9 II. Which is this guy right here. It's a really rugged, very fast. It's the ideal camera for an outdoor photographer. You know, they just released that A1, and I'm looking into picking up one of those, but that's a pretty penny. So we'll see. And then as far as lenses, obviously, I am a Sigma ambassador, so I am shooting all Sigma lenses. And this one here is the 100-400, and I use this a ton. This is in my bag quite often. So yeah, that's kind of my, well, and I'll give you the quick rundown.
Yeah.
You know, every day in my pack, I have the 14-24-28, and that's the DGDN. So that means it goes right onto the Sony camera. And then I have the 24-70, and this is an awesome lens. I love this lens. I have the 24-70, again, DGDN, so it mounts right on the camera. And then the 100-400 is also DGDN, e-mount goes right on. And then, you know, for the wildlife stuff I have, this is a 150-600, and wow. I just use the MC-11 adapter, and that works really well. It's totally fine. I use that, and then I also have a 500 millimeter around here somewhere, but it might be downstairs at the moment. Sorry, I can't pull that one up. But yeah, that's kind of my general kit. I'm big into the zooms. I don't shoot many primes. You know, like you're saying, as a portrait photographer, I bet you're shooting an 85-1.8 yeah. or something like that, 85-1.4, 135-50. And I have a couple of those because I do shoot portrait. As an outdoor photographer and an action sports photographer, I'm still called upon to get some headshots once in a while. I still have to have some basic knowledge of how to get a decent headshot. So I shoot a little bit of portrait.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You know, and I want to talk a little bit about the Sigma stuff. So, and your choices to use Sigma, since you're an ambassador, you know all this stuff, right? So,
right.
So brass tacks. Why Sigma versus on Sony brand lenses? Like, is there a palpable kind of definite difference between the two for you? What's your mindset around that?
Okay, I'm going to let you in on a huge secret. This outdoor stuff doesn't pay real well. This is very much a genre of passion shooting. Yeah. So years ago, I was shooting on the 7D, which is crop sensor camera. It's a smaller sensor, and I needed a super wide angle lens. And I was looking at two. This is quite a long time ago. This is probably 2013, 2014, something like that. And so anyhow, I was doing my research, and you know, there was the Canon brand name lens. It was a 10-16 or something like that. And then Sigma, this other brand that I knew about but didn't know a ton about, had a 10-20. And this, the Sigma, was about, oh, I can't even remember. I think it was $399 versus $999 for the Canon. I'm sure the Canon lens was a fine lens. I have no doubt about it. But I'm having to make some pretty serious gear decisions, especially back then. You know, an extra $500 is a big deal. That's a plane ticket to Utah to go actually shoot versus just having a neat, cool piece of glass. So anyway, I buy that 10-20 and I shoot with it. And within the 2 or 3 weeks, I have my first cover with that lens. So there, it's super sharp, it's focusing fast, it's getting me covers. I saved a bunch of money. I was like, whoa, why would I buy any more, you know, this, you know, the brand name expensive stuff? So the second lens I bought was the old 7200 EX. It's a 7200-28, and it's the old, it was their old high-end version. It was called the EX, and I got started shooting that. And I got another cover, a big cover for Powder Magazine. And the reason I got the cover, and gosh, I wish I had this queued up. I'd love to show it to you. But the name of the cover is Colorado, We're Looking at You. And it's because the skier is like covered in snow and he's, you know, skiing super fast right at me and the snow's blowing up everywhere. And you can see right into his eyeball and it's tack sharp. The athlete is looking at you through his goggles. And that's why we got the covers, because the lens was so sharp and so fast, and it picked it up. And so that's when I kind of started having a conversation with Sigma. They're like, who are you again? What are you doing? These covers are incredible. So I got on board with them, gosh, I guess probably the next year, probably around 2015. And now I've just been with them ever since.
And that's interesting. I was going to ask you that. So the path to becoming an ambassador, is it chicken and the egg, right? Was it, hey, Sigma saw this amazing photographer and said, hey, amazing photographer, use our stuff and talk about it? Or was it amazing photographer uses the gear and said, hey, Sigma, right, I'm using your stuff, you know, let's talk? And it was the latter, which I think is much better.
Yeah, I come by it very honestly. You know, I was, I am still, I'm not like one of these big social media stars by any stretch. I'm a working photographer. And this is no joke, I'm batting cleanup for a lot of those guys when they go to Norway or Aspen or Taos, wherever they go, and they deliver two photos at the end of, 5 days shooting. They call me up and say, hey, we need to get some work done. And then I show up and do like the heavy lifting.
That's awesome.
And that's actually a true story. I've gotten more than one call saying, hey, yeah, we had this influencer here and it didn't go so well. We'd like to hire you now. I'm like, I'll be there.
Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing. And,
yeah.
So they hire you.
We won't mention any names.
Yeah. They hire you to get the real photos, but they hire the other person for the exposure and not necessarily it's more of a facade, like an old Western town facade. And then if they really want a town, they call Liam for the real thing.
Yeah.
So Liam, what does it look like after the shoot? What does it look like after the shoot? Are you, one of those photographers that when, and no disrespect to the photographers that do, if you are, that does the shoot and then hands off the SD cards or FTPs, the files, to someone else that then does all the editing and makes it perfect? Or do you sit down after the shoot, like some wedding photographers, and go through each shot meticulously and dial it in?
I do that. I go through every single photo. Every photo that I turn in to a marketing director, to a magazine, whoever hired me for the shoot, has my touch on it. I don't send it out to edit. I don't just drop it off and say, here's 5,000 photos, you deal with it. I do all of that.
They only get what you're proud of, right? They don't get extras, just what you feel like is ready to leave.
Yeah, well, a lot of times at the beginning, when we start talking about the contract, they're like, well, how many photos will we get? I'm like, way more than you are going to want to deal with. They're like, okay, so is that like 8 or 10? I'm like, no, you're going to get the what I call the full take, which for me is, don't get me wrong, if I shoot, I did a big shoot in Taos this year for their marketing campaign, and I bet we shot 8 or 9,000 photos over, maybe more than that, 10,000 photos over 8-day period. I don't hand in 10,000 photos. I think the final take from that was probably, probably 300. Mm-hmm. But, even that 300, you could edit down even tighter to about 30. And that's what they're really going to use, is probably that core 30. But I don't want to make the decision for them. I want to give them lots of options, be like, look, here's all the good stuff. This is the best part of our shoot. Take it all, and then you guys can pick exactly which images you want. But they're all edited, clean, no dust spots, color corrected, level horizons, all that kind of stuff. They're ready to go.
That is awesome. I love that. That's really interesting. How does it happen before the shoot? Like, what's that flow? Like, when you're sitting here right now, like, is the phone ringing and people are saying, hey, Liam, we need you in Aspen, the end of July or wherever, right? Does it work like that?
Yeah.
Or do you have to dial for dollars? How do you get your assignments? How do they come to you?
Man, it's all over the place. It's a classic situation of like, when it rains, it pours.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're just backed up with shoots. You're like, oh my gosh, I have to shoot this K2 thing and an Oakley thing and an Atomic thing. And then we're going to South America and it's just backed up. You're like kind of overwhelmed. And then other times you're kind of like crickets. You're like, really need to get some work going here. What's that?
Nobody loves me. Where is everyone?
Exactly. Exactly. And then, it actually works pretty well for me. So my wife works full time. She's a wildlife biologist.
Oh, cool.
And right now is her busiest time of year. And it's my slowest time of year. So it works out really well because typically all winter and spring, I'm on the road. I'm driving all over the country, chasing storms, going to Europe, going to Canada, wherever, whatever it is we're doing, we're all over the place. And I'm super busy and she's home and that's when she does all her office work. And then it kind of flip flops right about, you know, kind of middle of May. Into about late July. That's her heavy work season and she's gone all the time. So honestly, I'm not even really looking for much work, although it is finding me. I have a bunch of projects lining up as we speak. But yeah, just it kind of ebbs and flows. And for a lot of photographers, I think that's a challenging thing because you never know how much money you're going to make and you never know what's going on. You just, So it's challenging to make a schedule because as soon as I commit to going somewhere with the family, inevitably, so-and-so Osprey is going to call and be like, hey, we need to do this like week-long photo trip in the backcountry. Are you available? And you're like, ah, oh, I just committed to do it, you know? So, So it's challenging.
Yeah, and that's part of the excitement, though. I mean, you know, your description of running around the country chasing storms and doing all that stuff. I know photographers that are listening to this are like, wah, I want to be doing that.
<You know? laughs> No, it's awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love it. That's what I do. Like, I live to be shooting deep powder days. It's one of my favorite things in the world.
You know, when you're out and about and you're doing one of those shoots, what's with you? I know it's obviously going to be depending on what you're shooting that day. Is it wildlife? You need that long lens, or is it, right, you know, something else? But generally, what does your pack look like? Is it in, what's in it, in that pack? Is it, and what is the pack? Is it a backpack? Is it a, you know, a shoulder bag?
Here it is, right here.
Yeah, bring it up.
I got, well, it's empty at the moment. I think the tripod's still on it. So this is the Backlight Elite 45 liter. So it's a big old, actually still got the tripod on there from the other night.
Look at that.
So yeah, that's for wildlife shooting, obviously. And then I can configure this to put in a 500 millimeter if I want. And this is the big insert. I also have a half insert for skiing. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, you know, for a wildlife shoot, then yeah, I either have that 150-600 or the 500 with me. And then I'll probably also bring something like a 7200 and a 2470 because I do like to shoot the wildlife wide so you can see the whole, like, the environment where the animals are. For skiing, there's a lot of other gear that's involved. I have avalanche beacon, avalanche probe, shovel. I have water, food, something called climbing skins, which I won't get into the details of all the little minutia of gear. Climbing skins, food and water, I already said that. Extra batteries, extra cards, an extra layer of clothing. I mean, it's a pretty serious pack. At the end of the day, when I walk out the door to go do a ski shoot, I've got a solid 40-ish pounds on my back, maybe a little less than that, maybe 35 to 40, somewhere in there. And if I'm going to go out land shooting or wildlife shooting, I don't have as much of that technical gear. I certainly have food, water. Oh, I also have my a personal locator beacon just in case, you know, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'll do big hikes to go photograph. You know, sometimes even multi-day hikes, and that's a whole nother set of gear. I won't get into that. Wow. But yeah, there's always much more than just the camera and lenses with me. There's very, very often going to be, you know, rain gear, food, water, personal locator beacon, all that kind of stuff.
And how are you carrying all that? It's not all in that one bag, right? It's you multiple.
Yeah,
bags,
yeah, it's all
in that bag.
It all fits in there just perfect.
Wow. Okay. So depending on the adventure that you're heading out on, you got one bag, right? And I'm guessing night before you head out, you do your configuration, or I'm going to need this lens and this, you know, all these things, and you pack it out and you go. But it's all the same bag. It's not like this is my ski mission bag and this is my wildlife bag. It's just one, and you just mix and match what goes in there, right?
Well, that's partially true. I have a bunch of think tank packs, and so sometimes I have it set up where my ski pack, and I have the exact same pack, but that one is filled with a different set of gear. And then I have a smaller pack, which, yeah, so I have multiple packs. It's not like I just have one. I do have a bunch of different ones. And that way I don't have to worry about taking all my ski stuff out and, you know, making sure I put it back in if I go back. You know, this time of year, of course, I put all that stuff away. I'm done skiing now. Yeah. But, you know, in March, April, May, when I might be going out for wildlife and landscape, as well as shooting, skiing, that's why I keep multiple packs going.
I love that. I love that. So much to talk about, man. I feel like we could talk for hours about it. so many questions. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like, in your adventures, are you doing drone stuff? Are you doing any video? You know, all that stuff. So, yeah. Well, just answer that. Like, are you doing anything crazy like that?
Yeah. Not really. I don't shoot video professionally. I do a little. I have a budding YouTube channel. I'm just kind of wrapping. You know, it was a total COVID thing. I was bored, so I was like, "Well, I'm just going to buy a GoPro and a microphone and learn how to do a little bit of video."
Why not?
So now I kind of it's done okay. You know, it's okay. It's nothing special. There's a couple fun things in there that some folks might want to check out, including gear. And showing my actually at one point I had one of my lenses roll over 1,000 feet down a mountain on a photo shoot we were doing, and that was kind of entertaining.
Did it survive?
But yeah, it did.
It did. Okay.
Yeah, the 1424 took a big ride, 1,000-foot ride down a couloir, so like a steep chute filled with snow and ice, just bounced all the way down the mountain, and it was fine. We got back down, you know, a couple hours later, scooped it up, put it on the camera. I was like, works fine.
Wow. See, that's a story. That's a Sigma. That's a little Sigma vignette story.
Adventure. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, adventure. I put that on my YouTube lenses. Channel. You can. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, we'll have to check. I'll link to that. Make sure I have the link to that. I'll put a link in
in the
show notes for that. As we wrap this up, what if people want to check out some of the stuff that you're working on, including that YouTube channel, your website, etc., and social media, what's the best place for them to go connect with you?
Yeah, you know, Instagram is easy, just Liam Duran Outdoors. I do have a website, which is woefully I haven't worked on that in a long time. There's all the photos you were talking about, the covers, there's like 30 more to go in there.
What?
And I just haven't and I just haven't had time to do it. I need to clean up my website, but yeah. And then the YouTube channel is really more for fun. It's not gonna blow anyone's mind. It's just kind of fun. It's something I've been doing. At some point I'll either have to take it seriously or just can it, but I haven't come to that point yet.
Yeah.
So those are kind of good ones. You know, I'll be presenting, actually just found out the other day, I'll be presenting at Optic, B&H Optic on the main stage. So that's actually what I'm working on today, is putting that presentation together.
Excellent.
And what else? Yeah, that's kind of everything that's happening right now. It's a good place to find me, is on that social media stuff.
You're busy. Have you ever given any thought to like workshops and taking people out in the field and showing them the ropes and all that?
Yeah, we have been talking about that. And you know, the hard part about that is getting the permits. Getting permitted is a challenging aspect of it. But especially for like backcountry stuff, it's just dangerous. So you have to work through a guide company, which I have. I work closely with San Juan Mountain Guide, and we've had casual conversations about how we would put together like a backcountry ski workshop. So that might be coming this winter, and that would be a fun one to do for sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, keep me posted on that. I'm interested. And if I can't come, I'll definitely help you get the word out about that. All right. Liam Doran, thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you. It's
Frederick, thanks for having me.
Anytime, man. Anytime. It's always an honor to talk to a working photographer that beats his equipment up, right? And instead of polishing it.
Yeah. Trust me, Sigma knows all about that. They're like, what did you do this time? They're like, oh, I just broke a little piece and you can fix that. Yeah.
That's right. Hammers weren't designed to be kept in a toolbox, right? They want to hammer stuff. So
that's exactly right.
All right, man. Well, we'll leave it right there. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Frederick.
This is Twitter.